Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better.
Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
It's the classic Stranger Danger tale, every parent's worst nightmare. On September 28, 1996, Jesus De La Cruz was outside playing with a friend when he was approached by a man who offered him a new bicycle. Jesus, who was only six at the time, went with him. He was never seen again. Despite the fact that police in Jesus' town of Lynn, Massachusetts, were able to quickly identify the man with whom Jesus was allegedly last seen, that man remains free to this day, and a family and a community is left wondering if little Jesus De La Cruz will ever get justice. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Jesus De La Cruz. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. We are coming to you from the past. Things are weird here. So, like, last week's episode was an update episode on Orrin and Orson West, aka Sincere and Classic. That was kind of a weird episode because Ethan is currently at this future time out of the country. So our recording schedule got all messed up. So we are doing this a little bit out of order. So say hello from the past.
I have no idea what you just
said. He is so annoying. Okay. So anyway, this week's episode was brought to us by a listener once again.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And this guy's actually been listening to the show for a while, and he messaged us, and I do apologize, like, because he did message us about this like a while ago, and you know, just things happen. And so I didn't really get a chance to look into it right away. But once I did, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I see why you sent this to me, because this is insane. He was actually friends with Jesus.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was a little boy when all of this happened. And it, you know, obviously affected the community. And it's something that has stayed with him over the past 25 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And his personal opinion is that this case was botched, the investigation. And so I'll be interested to get your take on it. In our latest episodes, two episodes on Lucy Meadows, and of course, other cases we've covered, we've talked a lot about the danger of investigators getting tunnel vision and only looking into like one theory. Mm-hmm. But this case is kind of the opposite. It actually seems as though police were breaking their backs in order to come up with like as many theories as possible.
Okay.
And the end result was just Jesus never being found and no one ever being punished for his abduction.
All right. Well, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, exactly. So before we get into that, I do need to do a little out of order, belated shout out. Again, we did mix things up timeline wise. So apologies for all of you Patreon people who thought that we skipped you. We did not. We want to thank you so much, Elizabeth H., Nikki W., Millie Q., Rachel, and Caitlin C. We very much appreciate you. And if you would like to join us over on Patreon, you can get these episodes early and ad-free, along with Ethan's show about mental health, which I'm hoping he'll write an episode or two of while he's out of the country for 11 days.
Who knows?
Leaving me with the children.
Who knows? Hey, wait, you're coming also. So.
For 4 days.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, come on.
But for now, let's get to the story of Jesus De La Cruz.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Jesus De La Cruz was born on January 3rd, 1990 to Magdalena Rodriguez and Juan De La Cruz. Jesus is the youngest of five children. Magdalena was born in New Jersey, but she actually grew up in Puerto Rico. But then she returned to like the New York area. I think she lived in the Bronx, actually, around the time she gave birth to her first daughter, who was 16 at the time of Jesus's disappearance. So she had five kids ranging in age from 16 to 6 at the time of Jesus's disappearance, which was in 1996. Magdalena and her ex, I don't know if they were married or not, but they had three children together. After they split, Magdalena met Juan, and during their relationship, she gave birth to two children, including Jesus.
What does that bring the total up to?
Five. So she had five kids.
Oh, I thought she had five kids.
Oh, and then she met Juan? Two. Yeah. No.
Okay.
It was three and then two. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Magdalena was having some problems during this time, though. In 1994, 2 years prior to Jesus's disappearance, they were still living in New York, and New York child welfare authorities granted temporary custody of all five of her children to her sister, Alba, who lived in Lynn.
Do we know the circumstances behind that?
Not really. So Magdalena said that this was due to health problems she was recovering from that had required hospitalization. She did point out to reporter Pamela Ferdinand in an article in the Boston Globe that was published about 2 weeks after Jesus' disappearance that the health issues were not drug-related. And if it seems weird that she's just coming out and saying that, as we get into the story, it will make a lot more sense. In any case, Magdalena was able to regain custody of her children within about 6 months, and she and Juan moved to Lynn. Although it sounds like they might have been separated by this point or shortly thereafter, the timeline's a little fuzzy, but the article says that he lived above, like, Magdalena, her sister, and the kids.
In Lynn, Massachusetts.
In Lynn, yeah. Though, like, I think they might have actually separated after moving to Lynn, because in November of 1994, Magdalena actually obtained a restraining order against Juan. And this was in Lynn, not in New York. In the court document, she said, quote, "He has said that he will kill me if he has to avoid us getting separated. He threatened me that he will take my kids away and I will never see them again," end quote.
Because we all know that's, you know, threats are a good way to keep the marriage together.
Nothing a lady loves more. So remember how earlier that year, Magdalena's sister had custody of all five of the kids? Like, when I first read that, that struck me as odd because, like, the Juan was right there, you know,
right.
And he was the biological father of two of the kids. And I don't think they were married, but basically the stepfather of the three others. So it would make sense that if Magdalena was recovering from health issues and in the hospital, whatever, that Juan would have the kids. But apparently during that investigation, New York child welfare authorities accused Juan of abusing all five of the children. So that's why they ended up going to stay with Alba. However, it should be noted that those charges were later dismissed. And so I don't know how that works. Like, and again, you know, New York, I think, is very different from a lot of states in terms of, like, how they do things. But, like, in your experience working for CPS, like, how easy or how, like, common is it for a parent to get accused by you guys, you know, of abusing kids and then to have those charges dismissed?
Well, so first off, social workers can't bring charges.
Well, no, I didn't mean like legal charges. I mean, I meant that like
the accusation.
Yeah, the accusation. Like they said, like in the report or whatever, and that's basically why he didn't get custody.
It's pretty common.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably half the cases I had were unfounded.
Really?
Yeah, but those were, you know, they were reported on by other people. It's not like CPS saw abuse.
Right. And again, we don't know the circumstances of this at all because, you know, I haven't seen any of the actual files, not that any of that would be public, of course, so I couldn't, but this is just all kind of like reported on in newspaper articles after Jesus's disappearance.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, I've mentioned mandated reporters.
Right.
Apparently a lot because a friend sent a TikTok video to me about.
Oh, the teacher, the man. I'm a mandated. I'm not a snitch. I'm a mandated reporter. Yes. Oh, I guess I'm a snitch. Yeah. Her. I like her. She's fun.
Yeah. You know, those people implied by the name, mandated reporters, like school teachers, doctors, things like that. They have to report anything that they suspect might be child abuse.
Right.
So, I mean, like I had cases where a doctor would report child abuse and was saying to me out loud, like, I don't actually think anything's going on. They're a lovely family, but I have to report this.
Oh, they're, just because it's like a suspicious injury,
a suspicious
or
bruise
something.
Or something, yeah. Like that. Yeah. A weird shape in the bruise.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, it was like a parent using a belt to, well, I know you have your opinions about that, but there's nothing actually illegal about it.
Oh, I'm well aware it's not illegal.
So a lot of times there was like stuff like that. Anyway, regardless, it's probably about 50% of the time, at least in my experience.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So like this makes sense then in terms of just general statistics and like kind of how these things go. So 8 months later, which would have been about mid-1995-ish, Magdalena was back in court asking them to drop the restraining order because the couple had worked things out. Now, I don't think that she meant that they worked things out in like that they were back together, because at some point during this, Juan lived in the apartment above them, like I mentioned, but then he just moved to Miami.
Okay. Wow.
Right. So I think it was just more like, you know, we worked it out in that he's not a danger. He's not a threat. Everything's fine.
Well, maybe. Yeah. He's not a danger because he moved to Miami. So.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, in any case, but I think if he just moved to Miami, like she wouldn't have bothered to go to court to get the restraining order lifted. Sure. I mean, yeah. I feel like they had to have come to some sort of agreement or, you know. Truce,
hey,
or
honey,
whatever.
As romantic as that was to threaten me.
Yeah.
Don't really like it.
Yeah. So given all of this, it may seem suspicious that Jesus then disappeared mm-hmm. 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And Juan would seem like a pretty obvious suspect. However, by all accounts, the relationship between him and Magdalena actually had improved, at least to the point where there weren't like any active issues, you know? Plus, police were able to quickly determine that Juan was in fact in Miami when Jesus went missing. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the geography of the eastern United States, Miami, Florida is about 1,500 miles or about 2,400 kilometers away from Lynn, Massachusetts. And like I said, so police knew like he was down there. As soon as he heard about his son, though, he drove up from Florida to begin helping with the search.
That's a long drive.
Yeah, it took him like 3 days. At this point, Magdalena and her 5 children lived in an apartment in Lynn. This was the type of neighborhood where everyone knew each other and the kids were allowed to go out and play with minimal supervision. In reading the articles, which got progressively shittier, basically, in terms of what people were saying, and I'm going to get into that in depth later, and just like knowing this type of neighborhood, there are definitely a lot of people out there whose first thought is, who lets a 6-year-old go out and play on his own? Well, the answer is a single mom raising 5 kids, or in the case of my mom, raising 2. When we moved after my parents' divorce, my sister was 5 and I was 9, and we lived in an apartment, and like we just wandered around on our own constantly. Like my mom worked full time and like we didn't have babysitters. Like we were just on our own. We would go into people's apartments. We'd be at the playgrounds by ourselves, like whatever. And that's just how it was. And that was just a few years before this. This was in 1996. I want to say this was all happening in like 1990.
Right. Jesus was out in the yard by himself. Like no other siblings were out there playing with him?
He was with a friend. So he wasn't in the yard. There was like an alley nearby that the parents like to have the kids play in because you could see them from like the windows, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, so Jesus was like, but I think Jesus on this day and on many days wasn't just there. He was just kind of like around the sure. neighborhood, but like with other kids. And, you know, in Magdalena, like he was just out all day because this was a Saturday. And so like Magdalena would like pop her head out every now and again, check on him, you know, like she would listen for him. You know, she said that she remembered like hearing him like screaming and, you know, with his friends, like playing, like not bad screaming, but like screaming with his friends at like 2:30. And then, you know, like throughout the day, she would either see him or hear him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So Jesus was playing with one of his friends, a little boy named Bernard Edwards, and they were heading home. Now, Jesus had a pink Huffy bicycle that was undoubtedly like a hand-me-down from one of his sisters.
Yeah.
Now, reports differ, but this bike had at least one flat tire, if not two. And I even read one article that said that the seat was missing. So, like, this bike was super busted.
How would you even ride that?
Yeah, well, he wasn't. He was just, like, walking with it.
Okay.
Now, as they were walking, a man approached the children. So he approached Bernard and Jesus. And this man was described as a white man in his 20s or 30s with shoulder-length brown hair. He was walking a dog with two different colored eyes, one brown and one white. This man told Jesus that he would either give him a new bike or let him borrow one, something along those lines. Either way, Jesus was six and thought that seemed like a great idea. His friend was only 8 or 9, depending on the news source. I've seen both ages, but either way, he was, you know, young himself. And so he didn't feel comfortable like stopping him. And he had been told to like wait on whatever corner they were at, like for his dad. So his dad was going to come meet him and take him home or do whatever. So, you know, Jesus is like, oh, I'm going to go get this bike. And Bernard was like, well, I've got to stay here. I've got to wait for my dad. And Jesus just left with the man and he was never seen again.
Wow.
So Magdalena was making dinner at the time. So this was around like 6 o'clock on, you know, again, on a Saturday, end of September. So it's like kind of getting dark, but it's not dark at all. Like there's still plenty of daylight at this time, but it was dinner time, so she was expecting him to come home around then. But he obviously didn't, and at first she just assumed, you know, he was still playing, because again, he's a kid, like he can't tell time. He doesn't know. So she went out, you know, to just go get him basically, but she didn't see Jesus. So then Magdalena got her older daughter, and then they combed the neighborhood for over 5 hours.
So I guess maybe she didn't know that he was with Bernard, because
I don't think she knew, specifically that he was with Bernard. Okay. She just knew that he was like playing with kids.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they searched themselves and then ended up calling police and reporting Jesus missing at 12:35 a.m. Now, police immediately took this seriously. And, you know, one of the sources I read said that, like, basically the entire morning shift had just come on and they all went out. So it was like 20 officers mm-hmm. who all went out. But Magdalena waiting so long to contact them was seen as a red flag.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that.
Yeah. But I do think that you have to take into account the fact that Magdalena had already had experience with Child Protective Services in New York and, you know, did perhaps have a few reasons to be wary of like police and just authorities in general. So I do think that those factors contributed to her waiting to call.
Isn't there also a general trust issue within the Hispanic community?
Yeah,
of
no, for sure.
Law enforcement.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, there's that factor also.
Yeah, and this is Massachusetts. Like, you know, sorry to everybody in Massachusetts, but yeah, like, you know where you live.
You just isolated, like,
any of our listeners. They know. Police quickly found the friend who last saw Jesus, Bernard, and got the story about the man with the dog. So just to put the speed of all of this in perspective, because, like, you know, this is so different basically in every case. Police didn't know about Jesus' abduction until 12:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. But by Monday morning, September 30th, the story was on the front page of the Boston Globe. So this entire story of what happened was like laid out in this article. They had a lot of information by publication. What's more is they had already located the man they believe to be the one last seen with Jesus, 26-year-old Robert Levesque. According to neighbors, everyone knew his dog because he was so striking, you know, with two different colored eyes. That's something you're going to notice. Levesque also apparently walked his dog around the neighborhood often, and some neighbors said that he had approached children in the past.
Mm.
And now police were very cagey in this first article, which makes total sense. Like, they wouldn't say that Levesque was a suspect, for instance.
Sure.
But they did arrest him on an unrelated misdemeanor weapons charge while they were investigating Jesus' disappearance. Lynn Police Captain Joe Rowe told reporters, quote, "The man has been seen quite regularly in the area recently. We don't have any reason to believe that this was a domestic situation," end quote.
Domestic situation meaning what?
Like, meaning that one of the parents or a family member harmed him, abducted him, whatever.
Okay. Seems a little quick to jump to that, but okay.
Well, again, I think that it's very much what we saw in Lucy Meadows, where they're saying one thing publicly, but that's not necessarily the whole story, right?
One would hope.
Because the police did, like I mentioned earlier, find Magdalena's actions to be suspicious. In fact, Rowe filed a form with the Department of Social Services to launch an investigation into Magdalena for abuse and neglect, partially due to the fact that she took so long to report Jesus missing. But before we talk more about Magdalena, let's talk about Robert Levesque. Robert Levesque was a transient who had at least 7 different addresses in the 6 months leading up to this case.
All around Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
Though his lawyer, David Tuhig, described him as a commercial artist and medical technician from an upstanding Lowell family, at the time of his arrest, he was working as a stock boy at Crosby's Market, which was the local grocery store.
As medical technicians do.
Right. So police ended up finding him after news reports mentioned the dog, and one of his former landlords called police and was like, "Oh, wait, no, I totally know who that is. Like, I've told him to get rid of his dog. Like, that's Robert Levesque." So as I mentioned, he was arrested on a weapons charge that was unrelated to Jesus. And on October 1st, he was arraigned on charges of receiving stolen property and violating probation on a previous larceny conviction.
Oh, so they stacked the charges on him.
Yep. Mm. That's exactly what they did. But prosecutors were, of course, saying that this had nothing to do with him being a suspect in Jesus' disappearance.
Oh, no. But if you happen to know something, maybe mm-hmm. those charges go away.
Yeah, it was shady as hell. They initially had him held on a $50,000 bond.
Okay. Something clearly he can't afford.
Exactly. But then it was eventually lowered to $10,000, but it was a cash bond.
Ah.
So meaning what that basically means is that in order for him to get out of jail, he would have to come up with the full $10,000 in cash. He couldn't go to a bail bondsman where you pay a non-refundable 10%, meaning $1,000, and then they put up the rest of the bond. So basically, little quick bail bonds lesson. If you have a $10,000 bond, you go to a bail bondsman, you give them $1,000, they pay the $10,000. And, you know, assuming that everything's cool and you like show back up for your court date and everything, they get the full $10,000 back and you are just out that $1,000.
Right.
But they stipulated that it was a cash bond. So that was not an option. And Robert Levesque would have had to have $10,000 to get out of jail. And, you know, spoiler alert, nobody paid his bond. So this upstanding family in Lowell, like, was not interested in putting up 10 grand to get him out. Police searched Levesque's apartment and car and dusted for prints. During this search, they found duct tape and handcuffs, but were unable to find any direct physical evidence that led to Jesus. But there is a lot of highly compelling circumstantial evidence, in my opinion. Of course, the biggest one is the fact that he had been seen around the neighborhood multiple times by multiple people with a dog that matched the description given by the witness. But in addition to that, Levesque's apartment was right around the corner from Jesus' apartment, and it was also right across the street from a playground. Plus, on Saturday night, the night Jesus disappeared, Robert was supposed to go to work. But instead, he called in and told his employer that he couldn't come to work because he was sick with a 104-degree fever. Mm. I mentioned that he was kind of a transient, and his family had no idea at this time, like, where Robert was living. They hadn't heard from him in months. But on Sunday, the day after the kidnapping, he went to the train station, parked his car, took a train to Lowell, and randomly showed up at their house, like 30 miles away. Hmm. And that's actually where he ended up being arrested.
In Lowell?
Mm-hmm, at his parents' house.
What did he say to the police? Like,
that he had nothing to do with anything, that he didn't know this boy, and he didn't... Well, he actually said that he didn't even have a dog at first.
Okay.
Because he's like, my landlord made me get rid of him. I don't even have a dog anymore. But like, the dog was like found in his apartment. So
he's just flat out denying that he was seen leaving with Jesus.
Yeah. Like, his story is like, it was a different dude. It was not me. Yeah. He didn't have an explanation like, oh yeah, no, I saw him. We talked about a bike, but like, he went his way, I went mine. It was nothing like that. He denies that any of that happened, period.
The old, those aren't my pants defense. Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
That's not my two different colored eyed dog. It's some other guy who looks like me and whatever. Police continued to search the surrounding area in Lynn, including places that both Jesus and Robert were known to have gone, but nothing was found. Flyers were put up everywhere by volunteers, and Magdalena's friends and family helped with the media.
Where's the bike?
No idea. So I don't think the bike was ever found either, because I could not find ever any mention of the bike being found or any mention of anything belonging to Jesus ever being found.
So like, Jesus didn't leave the bike wherever it was that they were walk off with
the guy.
Yeah.
Not as far as I know. Nothing that I've read.
So in theory, he took the bike with him.
That's what I got from everything that I read, although it's never said explicitly. So one of the reasons why I think that the bike isn't around is because, like what I mentioned earlier, in that the different news articles kept on saying the bike was in like worse and worse condition. And, you know, like, one news article said it had one flat tire, one said that it had two flat tires, one said that it had two flat tires and no seat. And so I feel like if the bike had been left behind, we wouldn't have that discrepancy.
Right.
I mean, we might still, honestly, but, you know, I don't know. On Tuesday, Bernard Edwards, the witness who was with Jesus, was taken down to the police station to look at mugshots. He was not able to positively identify Levesque. Now, Levesque's lawyer obviously like jumped on this, saying that it was a case of mistaken identity and his client was being railroaded. But to me, this kid was 8 or 9. Like, all adults basically look the same. I mean, you show an 8 or 9-year-old, one, I'm assuming, and actually I don't know this for a fact, I'm assuming that Bernard was like Hispanic as well. And we know that there's a lot of problems with cross racial identification. Mm-hmm. And so you have that with the fact that it's a child trying to identify an adult. And yeah, I mean, if you throw like three mugshots of like white guys the same age with like the same hair.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah. And plus, this guy had a dog. So I'm sure the kid was paying a lot more attention to the dog than the random old dude who came out to them. Like, he doesn't care about that guy.
Right.
It should also be noted on that note that when Bernard was shown the dog that was recovered from Levesque's apartment, he did positively ID him.
Mm-hmm.
As the investigation went on and Robert Levesque's name kept popping up in news reports about the kidnapping, his lawyer kept beating this drum. At one point, he even compared Levesque to Richard Jewell, the security guard who had basically had his life ruined after being falsely accused of the Olympic bombing that had just happened in Atlanta a few months prior to this. Yeah, like there's a whole Boston Globe article that was like, lawyer sees similarities like between his case and Richard Jewell. And it's just like, oh my God. From what we know, there was no direct physical evidence that pointed to Robert Levesque abducting Jesus de la Cruz. But, you know, this was a big story. And there were some reporters who did a little digging and found out some interesting information about Robert.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. On October 4th, and again, Jesus went missing on September 28th, so we're talking 6 days later. The Boston Globe published a front page above the fold article written by Pamela Ferdinand and Rick Kahn with the headline, Suspects Ties to Youngsters Recalled. And I just want to like point out that like on September 30th, Jesus's abduction made the front page of the Boston Globe, which I thought was actually very impressive because the Boston Globe, for those of you who don't know, is a huge, huge newspaper, but it was below the fold and this is above the fold. So this actually had like more prominent placement.
I don't know.
Are you looking? Do you not know what above the fold does not? Oh,
no.
Am I? Okay. So basically, all right, we're doing visuals, which is always great on a podcast. All right. So picture a standard newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's folded in half. You unfold it. And where that, it's literally above the fold, where the crease is, you put your most important articles above that fold, above that crease. And then the secondary articles go below that crease on the bottom. And the reason is because when you're in a store or whatever, and you have a stack of newspapers, they're folded. So it's only the stuff above the fold that can be seen. So you put your prime stuff there.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So Jesus, his actual abduction was on the front page, but below the fold. But this article was like front and center above the fold. So again, the headline, Suspects Ties to Youngsters Recalled, like you read that and you know that like nothing great is going to be happening in this article.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like, oh yeah, we recall the time where he saved like a busload of children on their way to an orphanage from a fire or like whatever. Robert Levesque enjoyed being around young children. Former neighbors said that he was often seen with children and rarely, if ever, with people his own age. Robert Chaplin, who used to live downstairs from Levesque, told the Globe, quote, he used to have little boys up here. He told me they were his brothers. There would be two or three of them at the same time. They had keys. They would come whenever they wanted, end quote. Now, these boys were reportedly between the ages of 6 and 8. And Levesque, you know, I probably don't even need to tell you, does not actually have any brothers.
Yeah.
He has 4 sisters. Yeah, and this obviously raises a ton of red flags, but a former roommate of Levesque's, a woman who asked to remain anonymous, said, quote, he is weird, but I can't say he hurt a kid. He told me once he never wanted to be a father. He likes to be an uncle. He is irresponsible, kind of living off in a dreamland, but I don't think he did it, end quote. And that's somebody who lived with them.
Still, like, oh, giving keys to your apartment to little kids?
Yeah, like 6 to 8 years old.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. And so the roommate, who was, you know, kind of like defending him, did go on to tell reporters that for about 6 years, Levesque had acted as a mentor to a boy who was at this point 14, meaning that that had started when the child was around 8. She didn't give much more information about this, but did say that they had abruptly cut off contact that past April.
Yeah, probably when he aged out. When he aged out of Levesque's interest.
Yeah, and, you know, I should mention, so reporters eventually found, like, this boy's mom, and all she would say is that they knew Levesque, but she would not elaborate on any of it.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't... That doesn't exactly say, oh, yeah, that he was a great mentor and they had a great relationship.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I don't want to talk about it because it's going to bring up a lot of really dark stuff.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that several of the neighbors recognized Levesque from his walks around the neighborhood. Another reason he stood out was because he seemed to take an unusual interest in their children. Judy Carr, who lived in the neighborhood and had a 6-year-old son, said, quote, "When he would come up to an adult, he would first say something about the weather, whether it was hot or something, and then immediately ask why the kids were playing in the street. Shouldn't they be playing over in the park?" he'd say over and over again. He seemed to always be watching the kids, end quote.
This guy's just, he's just all kinds of creepy.
Yeah. And it gets worse. So after this article came out, officials from the Big Brother Association contacted the Boston Globe. Now, for those of you who may not know, Big Brother is a mentor program that pairs adults with at-risk youths. These officials told the Globe that Levesque had been rejected from at least 2 Big Brother associations because they were suspicious of his motivations. John Pearson, executive director of the Big Brother Association of Greater Boston, put it plainly, quote, "Sometimes the person who has an unhealthy attraction to children will seek multiple opportunities to be with them. Our system identified him as a candidate to scrutinize carefully," end quote.
It's Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know. And so that article about Big Brother, like, they went on to say, they're like, yeah, you know, the screening process to, like, be a mentor is very long. Like, it's background checks, it's employment checks, it's, you know, lots of stuff, because again, they don't want to put their children with predators.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, we didn't even, like, we barely started the whole process. Like, we just straight up were like, no, thank you. Like, we're not going to waste our time. So none of this sounds good for Levesque, obviously. But at this point, he hasn't been charged with anything related to the abduction. And police were still performing searches and looking at all avenues. Searches of a nearby cemetery where Levesque was known to have walked his dog were done. And several items of clothing were found, which were then sent to the state crime lab for testing. And around this time, there's also a pair of, like, kids' jeans found in a dumpster that they thought could be related, but Magdalena couldn't say that they were Jesus's, and it was just kind of inconclusive. Mm. And so, you know, the clothing, honestly, those jeans and then some of this clothing, which I couldn't find described anywhere, that has been bothering me because it's 1996. This is, like, right after the OJ trial. So, like, DNA has been used in court, but it wasn't common. So when they sent them to the state crime lab, but, like, I wonder what tests were done and what tests could be done at this point. You know, like,
right,
what you could find now as opposed to in 1996.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it depends on what is on the clothing.
Yeah, exactly. And none of that's ever specified. You know, obviously they don't want to make that public, like, whatever. But nothing ever came of any of the items of clothing. So, you know, whatever testing they did do in 1996 did not reveal anything of value. A pond in the cemetery was also drained, and eventually, like, other ponds in the area were, like, drained or searched, but nothing was ever found. Now, at this time, too, authorities were also starting to look a little harder at Magdalena. They were already suspicious of the fact that she waited over 6 hours to report Jesus missing. Then they found out that Magdalena and her boyfriend bailed a neighbor out of jail the night before Jesus' abduction. And he had been held on charges related to dealing crack.
Okay. But not exactly a direct correlation there.
No, not at all. But where this goes is insane. So police interviewed Magdalena several times, which makes total sense because that's what you do with the parents of a missing child. You interview them and interview them and interview them and hope that something comes of it. And so at some point she agreed to take a polygraph. On October 7th, 1996, police revealed to the press that she failed the polygraph. An unnamed law enforcement source, and, you know, this is again unnamed, like a source close to the investigation, made a bold claim for somebody who won't give his name, saying, quote, "It flies in the face of everything she told us," end quote.
Okay. How can it fly in the face when you're answering yes or no questions?
I don't know, man. But, you know, Mr. Anonymous is bold. So this started taking the case in a whole different direction. There started to be whispers that Jesus' abduction could have been related to drugs, namely that he had been abducted because Magdalena owed money to drug dealers.
Based on what evidence? And who's saying this? Is this just shit that's coming up in the press or what?
Yeah, I mean, this unnamed source is talking shit. She failed the polygraph, and the night before Jesus disappeared, she bailed out the neighbor from jail who was being held on drug charges. Yeah. And don't forget the fact that she's Puerto Rican. So there's that. And they're in Massachusetts. And sorry, Massachusetts again. But again, we will get to all of that in detail. But we are actually going to stop here for this week because there's a lot more, you know, to this investigation, like after it takes this left turn. And, you know, when all this is going on, Robert Levesque is still sitting in jail on these unrelated, like, theft charges and whatnot. So we're going to talk about, like, what's going on with him. We're going to talk about the, you know, the investigation, what they're saying about Magdalena, what they're saying about the family, and just what is going on. And let me tell you, part two gets nuts, and we check in with everybody, like, where are they now style? And you won't be able to guess. Like, I'll tell you that much right now. Like, gun to your head, if I asked you where, like, these people were, at least in Robert Levesque's case, no. You would not get that.
Okay.
So yeah, it gets crazy. So we are going to stop here. Now, just like our last two-parter, Lucy Meadows, for those of you who have joined us on Patreon, you will get part two in your feed very shortly. For everybody else, you will get it next week. You know, I'm sorry we're doing two-parters in a row. I did not intend that, but this case just had a lot of stuff going on, just like Lucy's. So it just kind of ended up that way. But we want to thank you for joining us, and we hope that you come back next week as we finish the story of Jesus de la Cruz. Jesus de la Cruz has been missing from Lynn, Massachusetts since September 28, 1996. At the time of his disappearance, he was 4'6" tall and 60 pounds. He is a Puerto Rican male with brown hair and brown eyes. He has a scar above his left eye and birthmarks on his left calf and on his forehead. His left ear is pierced. He was last seen wearing a white t-shirt, jeans, and brown or yellow boots. Jesus was 6 years old when he went missing. He would be 32 today. Anyone with information on Jesus de la Cruz's disappearance is urged to call Lynn Police at 781-595-2000. You can also reach out to the Boston FBI at 1-800-634-4097. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWGPod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And part 2 will be in your feeds very soon if you're on Patreon. For everybody else, we will see you next week.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join my Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.